The following presentation was recorded at the Christian Light Education Fall Workshops. More information at clp.org.
Where you explain the why, the cause and effect. So there's two ways. You can go out, bring in, or you can go deeper into the material and explain deeper why something happened. That's two areas. The third area is what I call support material, where you bring in models or charts or maps, that type of thing, that's not in the textbook. So extra material is another way of going beyond the textbook. It's an excellent way of doing it. The others that I have here, variety in presentation. This one, we always fall back on the old lecture, don't we, when we're providing something. Even when we say we're going beyond the textbook, what do we usually do? We talk about it, we lecture, we may spice it up a little bit with stories, but we typically fall back to the old lecture thing. And what other ways are there? What is possible besides lectures? Are there other options? Okay, group activities. Group activities are a good way to do it. I think that we need to relook at why we do field trips or where we go on field trips. Field trips are an excellent way of going beyond the textbook. Is that what your school does, or is it a day off? I see some smiles. But even if do y'all do all school or just classroom field trips? Or both? All school, classroom. Classroom is the most effective way because you can tailor it to your specific textbook. So even though we do pick a place that's educational, you might be faced with the fact that it doesn't fit your grade because of the subject you're teaching and you're doing grades 1 through 8 or 1 through 12. Or even if you do say, okay, we're going to go on a field trip tomorrow, this is coming up in your textbook, that's not quite enough. You should, the day before, prime your students, prepare your students for what to look for. They're not going to look for things unless you give them some hints. Look for this. Find the answer to this. Prep them for a field trip. And if it's like if you do have the individual, where you as a class are doing it, it's not the whole school, then you can tail it right around the textbook you're teaching. I want to encourage any teacher, though, regardless of whether it fits the textbook you're in, to use that field trip to go out to the natural scope of their learning by preparing them before they go with some questions, and the day after, discuss that. And you have an excellent tool there, if you use it right, to really go beyond the textbook in a way that you can't do just in the classroom. Now, I had a teacher yesterday that said they were going to a glass factory. And so he had his students do some research on glass, what it was, how it's manufactured, what you can do with it. And he had them do that. Then they go and they see it happening. And then they discuss it the next day. Their knowledge of glass has been really expanded, hasn't it? Now, another favorite is I call them extracurricular projects. That's things like reports or having them make the model. Another excellent way to go beyond a textbook. I just visited the sixth grade classroom before I left 2 weeks ago, and there in the back of the room is all these little cardboards, and they had made mountain ranges out of clay. Their understanding of mountains had been enhanced, hadn't it? In a way that the textbook couldn't do it. You know, when we write these textbooks, we have to make a decision on what we're going to include. Our U.S. history has 625 pages in it. There's lots of stories we'd like to put in there. We'd like to have written it like a storybook. What would the size of the textbook been? Been huge, wouldn't it? We have to make a decision on what we can put in a textbook, and typically they come down to the basic dry facts, and you as a teacher need to add the other. And that's where going beyond the textbook comes in. It puts a burden on you, but you can fit it to your situation too. We as textbook developers may think this is exciting, and you might think it's boring, or it might not fit your class, they might not be excited about it. So a textbook will give you the basics. It's not feasible for us to add all the extras. We stick in a few sidebars or a little tidbit here and there. We can't do it all. We can't even really get started good. So it's up to us as teachers in these situations to do that by bringing in that material. It's not easy because of the amount of work involved. Now, I want to throw out another one here. Teaching so that students with different learning styles can bring in some things. What do I mean by learning styles? You've probably heard the audio, the visual, the kinesthetic, these type learners. You know, adding some variety in your classroom lecture instead of your classroom lecture will facilitate those that have different learning styles. I'm going to look at that a little further or a little more detail later, but that is something that is part of going beyond the textbook. Now, the other question, though, is let's just stop and think. This looks like a lot of work, doesn't it? Find all this extra material, find these projects, go on these field trips, a lot of work. Is it necessary? Do we need to go beyond the textbook? Why do we do it? Waste of time, isn't it? What does it do to the child? Well, it enhances their understanding, for one thing. But I think it also creates in the child a perspective that there's more there. It can make them explorers, that they on their own, when they get older, will start looking. It can also make learning interesting. I think as teachers, we want to develop students that are interested in God's creation. Get them excited about life. It's amazing what God has created. Going beyond the textbook gives us the option of doing that. That's one of our goals, is to create in our students a desire to learn and discover. It can help them understand that there's things deeper under the surface of what these textbooks have. How many of you are familiar with Bloom's taxonomy? Some of you heard of it? It was developed in the 50s, I think. And what it is, number of steps that show how we as humans interact with information or how our minds process information. What's step one? Some of you experts here know about it. What's step one? Knowledge, right? Knowledge. Simply the facts. But you need that. I think we as teachers may be a little tempted not to spend enough time on the facts when we're going beyond the textbook. But that we need to have the facts there to build from. So step one is getting the facts across. Step two then is where they understand. They comprehend that information. And then they take that information once they comprehend it and they apply it to other things. Those are three levels that I think we as teachers need to have as a strong focus in going beyond the textbook. Now the others, I've got them listed there. And we can reach these levels. Whether to make them goals, I'm not sure. But it's analysis, where you separate the material into the different components, evaluating, where you make judgments, and then synthesis, where you build greater. Those are the different levels that he says that we have as we take knowledge and work with it. We step up the ladder across those different levels of interaction. Now, how do we teach beyond the textbook? I said I was going to get into the learning styles. How do we teach beyond a textbook? If we are to adapt to learning styles, how are we going to do that? That means that we... Let me get my notes here in my hand so I don't have to keep walking back and forth. That means what we will use visuals. We will use audio things. We will use hands-on things. You know, with... All of these, include them in there, in your teaching. Now, another one on learning styles is right brain, left brain. Are you familiar with this one? And what does it mean? It means one brain acts more active than the other. That's what scientists wanted to think, that if you are creative, and I can't tell which side of the brain that is, if it's right or left, but they're saying that one side of your brain is more active if you're creative, and the other side of your brain is more active if you're logical. But when they do brain scans, you know what they see? They see equal action on both sides. It physically doesn't happen. In the classroom, we do know that there are people that are logical and there are people that are creative, right? God created us that way. We have both types in our classroom. And then we have multiple intelligence. Anybody familiar with multiple intelligence approach to learning styles? This one says it's not how you learn, but it's the area in which you will learn. If you're musical, you'll learn about music. If you're logical, you'll learn about math. It doesn't mean that if you're musical and you make math musical that you'll all of a sudden learn math easier. It's just saying you're gifted in areas and that we have that and that's the way we are. How does that play out in the big picture? Research is actually inconclusive that we as teachers should use any of this as a focus in how we tailor our lessons. The information just doesn't clearly create a dynamic where you know where to go with it. So I'm going to challenge us here to say they're there. We recognize them in our students. But we can't tailor our lesson to that. Bloom tells us we got to teach the facts. That's pretty simple and straightforward. But I'd like for us to use those things as stepping stones to how we'll teach beyond the textbooks. There are visual things we can teach. There are things that we can teach hands-on. There are things we can teach by lecture. So if you want to teach something visual, bring in some charts, bring in some maps, or use flashcards. If it's an auditory type thing, use discussions and lectures, mnemonics. And if it's possible, the kinesthetic approach, use it with the models and drawing pictures. In reality, though, I think it's the material that determines how we're going to teach it. Would you teach geography better with a map or with a lecture? Pretty simple, isn't it? And I don't care what type learner you are, if you're left brain, right brain, musical or logical or kinesthetic, it just makes sense to teach geography with a map. And if you're going to talk about how something works, you might use an illustration, but basically if you're going to discuss cause and effect, it's going to be a mental processing that you have to talk about. So the material is what dictates the best way to teach it. I want to simplify this. And don't get all involved in the theories and think you have to add all these things into your class, but think, okay, what's the best way to teach this? And use that to teach it. The theories are great. They give us something to look at. But use them more as a way of brainstorming new ways rather than saying, I've got to include this, and I've got to include this, and I've got to include this, because this is a learning style. My next topic here is multimedia, and I'm throwing this out mainly just as a rhetorical type thing. Where does multimedia, and by that I mean computers and iPads and videos and interactive games, where should this fit in going beyond the textbook? Sounds like an excellent way to do it, doesn't it? Or not? In most of our settings, we're a little bit hesitant to go there, aren't we? And draw boundaries. I don't know if your schools have, or your churches have drawn boundaries in this. You probably have. Most of the conservative groups do have some guidelines as to what their schools can do. We would allow PowerPoints in school, but not video clips. Laptops. You let your students have laptops to take notes on? I did a little looking into this thing of you know, the technical side of learning and the gadgets or whatever you want. And I found that studies show that students retain more if they write it versus take the notes on a laptop. Does that make sense? They say that the person on the laptop will take more notes, but they will retain less. I think there's a mental process in writing it out that makes more of an impression. And I definitely let my students know about this one. At this point, they're not challenging me very strongly to have laptops there for notes, but I expect a day will come when they will be. So I'm going to have to fall back on this little tidbit here that you just don't learn as well on laptops. But I went into this and I did some research and I was looking for the top nations in education. And I found that Singapore at this point is. And so I wanted to see how do they teach. How do they teach? And I went ahead and put this in your notes. A study done by England says, teaching in Singapore primarily focuses on coverage of the curriculum, the transmission of factual information and procedural knowledge, and preparing students for end of the semester and national high-stakes examination. That statement, in a sense, says, don't go beyond the textbook. It says the top nation is teaching to the test. How does that strike you, that statement, teach to the test? The good or bad? You know, I've been in curriculum development 10 years, and I have shifted. In the beginning, it was almost like a sin to do that, to set up reviews and have a review sheet that they study that has a test on it. And I thought, man, this is just spoon-feeding, regurgitated on the test, and you're good to go. But the more I have talked to others, the more looking into this that I have done, you have a textbook of 628 pages, a humongous amount of facts. There are certain facts we want them to remember about U.S. history. There are certain things that are important about U.S. history. And if we want them to understand that and learn that, we need to focus on it. So teaching to the test, I've come to accept it a little bit, okay? It's objective teaching is what it is. You set your objectives. This is a new buzz, too. You've got to have objectives when you teach. You set your objectives, and then you've got to be able to test objectives. And so it is teaching for the test. And the top nation in the world does that, sounds like. Now, the next one also threw me a curveball. It says, and because they do, teachers rely heavily on textbooks, worksheets, worked examples, and lots of drill and practice. They also strongly emphasize mastery of specific procedures and the ability to present problems clearly, especially in mathematics. Now, the last sentence is the one that threw me a curve. Classroom talk is teacher-dominated and generally avoids extended discussion. Are you ready to go there? I'm not. I like to discuss things. So I've thrown some stuff out here just for you to process. But really why I went online and looked at this, I wanted to see if they use multimedia. And I found that they don't. The top nation in the world in education at this point, I saw some things where their urban areas are starting to move into it. But at this point, they're reaching that high level without multimedia approaches, without computers and whistles and bells, bells and whistles, as the idiom should be. Now, what I want to do is look at our Latin America textbook, or teaching textbook teacher's guide. Let me get my tongue untwisted here. And we will go through a lesson using this teacher's guide that illustrates how to go beyond a textbook. Now, there's a sense in which I'm going to try to sell you a teacher's guide, but ultimately what I'm trying to do is show you what goes into a preparing to teach beyond a textbook at the top level if you're going to do it. As we apply it to our time, it's definitely going to affect us. But this textbook, Teacher's Guide, this is what it looks like. How many of you are familiar with our, do you use it? This didn't come out with the textbook, it was a couple years later. Ed, the teacher that developed this, just seemed to have a natural ability of bringing, knowing where to what to bring in, where to bring it in. He's back to teaching now. I was so close to getting him to come in house, and then his church said, "Hey, we need a teacher," and so that's where we're at. Now, I want to acquaint this a little bit to our own setting. Now, you're familiar with this is the worksheets, okay? What does the worksheet do? This look at it. What is the purpose of this worksheet? You're basically dealing with information, aren't you? So as a textbook or curriculum provider, we develop this for the busy teacher. Now, if you are going to teach beyond the textbook where you're interacting with your students, this thing can be a little bit detrimental. And I want to explain why. I don't use anything like this. I lecture and I write notes on the board. And then I want them to write those notes in their notebook. And my goal is to have three ways that they interact with information. They read it, they hear me say it, and they write it. Now, if I have them do this worksheet, they're going to pay very little attention to the notes I give them on the board, because they know I can study this here and make pass the test. So a to the core lecture teacher probably won't use something like this. But in our setting, what's the situation? We can't hold enough classes to lecture and give notes on the whole textbook. So you might want to do a compromise of having this to fall back on when you don't lecture, and don't have them do it when you do lecture. I don't know how you want to do it, but in my setting, I don't use anything like this because we lecture entirely. And I provide an outline on the board that they can take their notes from. So step one in going beyond the textbook is deciding how you're going to do it. Are you going to lecture and give notes? Or are you going to use something like this? You can still use this and still discuss it in the class, still bring in your stories. That's still possible. But I'm just pointing out two things here about this approach of teaching beyond a textbook and how you present the material to the student. I did go ahead and make some copies here so you could actually look at this teacher's guide. And we'll look at the first lesson. This lesson is on Guatemala. I think it's chapter 13 in the textbook. First thing I want you to look at is if you are following the standard procedures for going beyond the textbook, the first thing you do is provide the overview, okay? You'll look at the overview. Now, you actually develop your own overview. What is the overview? What is an overview? Right, it's kind of the big picture look, isn't it? So you will, day one, night before, sit down and read the lesson you're going to teach. Quickly jot down your overview, and then you develop your objectives. And by objectives, like I said earlier, that is the facts that you want them to pull out. And this teacher's guide has that developed for you. If you're using another teacher's guide, other textbook, you would have to kind of form this on your own. The overview. Now, I don't think you need to be quite this detailed if you're forming your own. We had a format we wanted to do in the teacher's guide to step it out. So you develop these things. You see that there's three big pictures. Then there's three facts, three things he wants them to objectively be able to learn. And then down here, class presentation. This is where you provide your extra material you're going to bring in. And you'll notice that number one, or A, is the land, and that is objective number one up here. Then under that, he has a number of facts expanded out with extra information about those objectives. Then you'll see on the next page, symbols. That was the other thing in his objectives. And he develops his lecture of all the points that he wants to bring in about the symbols of Guatemala. And then since there was three objectives, the third objective is back here on the capital city. Now what I do, since I don't use the worksheet, this actually becomes the outline I put on the board, just a basic fact out of each, just a phrase or something that I put on the board, and the other part is I verbally insert it, lecture on it. But then the student takes that basic concept, and that's what goes in their notes. That's what they'll have to study. I put enough on the board that they can have in their notes what they'll need to study. So you prepare. The presentation is the outline that you will speak from, so to speak. You know, what the yellow sheet I gave you just now. That would be an outline. And that would go on the board. They would write that in their notebook then. I would have that process of, they would have read the section, whatever it was, and they would have that outline and they would write it. So that's your class presentation. And that is basically going outside and bringing in extra information, and then possibly, if there's opportunity, going into it, explaining the cause and effect behind it. That's all part of your class presentation. The first two things that I mentioned there about going beyond a textbook. Now, I'd like for you to turn to page 192. Now, this is actually in the textbook, but it's helping the student go beyond the textbook information. Well, let me back up a little. The first section here, 13.1, 1, 2, and 3, is once again kind of a little review of the information. What we've designed, I'm going to give you why we designed it this way. This could be something you assign them to answer as they read it. It's kind of a way of verifying they've put a little time into their reading. Or some teachers use it as a little review. Or another way is to use it as a pop quiz. Just have them read it. The next day in class, you say, okay, get out a clean sheet of paper and put your name in the upper right-hand corner, and you start to have students screaming at you. But anyway, they love pop quizzes. That's what I've done sometimes. And in fact, I'm doing a good bit of it this year. I've been amazed at how little a student gets from reading. Or let's say they read the text. If you had the same experience, they retain very little of their reading. So I've been giving pop quizzes. And you could use this for a pop quiz. This is the big facts from the section. And then that's a way of kind of evaluating what they've picked up. Now, this is a little sideline here. Pop quizzes are not to evaluate what they know. I'm going back to the I talked about exercises this morning. They're a process to learn. Pop quizzes are the same thing. It's to make them, like I said, I use them so that they'll put some effort into their reading. Now, even the best student will say, you know, I remember reading that. I just don't know the answer. Even good students will do that. What I do, I'm going to give 6-7 pop quizzes in a 6-week period, 4 questions on each one. Say if I give 6, that's 4-6, that's 24 possible answers. Top student in the class gets 15 of them. That's 100%. That's what I use for the top. And then I just curve everything. And I'll make that just 5% of their grade because it's kind of an effort thing. That's just how I do it. But anyway, this can be a pop quiz, a review, or a way for something for them to fill out when they read it. Basic facts, that's what that. Now, class discussion. Right here, we are taking them to the second level of Bloom's taxonomy. We ask the question, explain why Guatemala City is called the hub of the nation. So you, in your lecture, you've given them all this information about Guatemala City. Now there's to process it and say, why does that make it the hub? Or what did you learn today that makes you understand why Guatemala City is the hub? The teacher's got over here, gives some reasons. Since it's a discussion question, it could be something they entirely come up on their own. That's great if they're thinking outside the box, so to speak. But where this textbook is designed to have a little bit of this area where we're pushing students to the second level above the facts. And then the biblical application, of course, is the third level, right? Pushing to the third level, where they apply the Bible to the text or the text to the Bible, one way or the other. So you're applying your knowledge. So at the end of our sections, we have Basic facts, comprehension, and application. Three things that we try to reach that level of comprehension or working with the information of going to the third level. So it's in the textbook, but it's actually taking the information and processing it to what we call beyond the textbook. Now, we have tried to have our biblical application actually be biblical application. There is a tendency sometimes to try to force Bible to fit something or try to force something to fit the Bible. I found that pretty counterproductive with older students. They get turned off. And so we've tried to be careful with our Bible application that it really does apply and not some force-fed thing. Okay. Now, I'm not saying we always accomplished it. You may not think so. And there may be areas where you think you can do it that we didn't pick it up and do it in our textbook. But we try to do that in all of our new textbook, bring in Bible application where it does fit. Okay. Group activity. This teacher's guide gives a good example of that. If you'll look on page 190, where it says enrichment. Do y'all know what haggling means? Bartering is a term we're more familiar with, right? Okay, this section talks about the market in Guatemala City. It talks about haggling. So the writer here says, the class may enjoy a demonstration or at least a discussion of haggling. Bring some fresh fruit or other typical market products and show the difference between haggling and buying with a price attached. Sounds great, doesn't it? So you put two students up here in front of the classroom with a bowl of fruit in front of them and say, start haggling. Are they going to know what to do? You as a teacher are going to have to provide some ammunition for them to work with. Well, that's where this teacher guide writer came in. If you look on the next page, he gives 7 tips that these students will help them. He says, try not to act too interested. Make it look as if you're only casually interested. Make the seller give you the first price. Offer half as much. So he gives the students, he's developed what these students need to actually get up there and act it out. Now, you as teachers can do that about things in your textbook, but it takes a good bit of prep, doesn't it? And we would love to provide this type teacher's guide for all of our courses, whether I'll get it done, because, you know, how many of these are we going to sell? And if it costs us $200,000 to produce one of them, it's a high price, it's a loser. It's actually a loser. But we would like to provide something like this for you teachers to go beyond the textbook at all of our social studies as they come out new. But this is the type of thing we want to do, isn't it? We want to do this to go beyond the textbook. Projects. You know, I mentioned projects earlier. There's a CD in this teacher's guide that has projects on it. You can print these out. You don't have to go look for or design your own. The CD has a page like this for every nation in Latin America. I have printed out the ones for Guatemala and Belize, just to show you what it is. So at the beginning of the year, you say, okay, I want to do this project. And so when you teach each nation, you give one of these pages for them to fill out. And at the end of the year then, they have this nice little book with a page of each nation. And you may want to add your own little spice to it. I mean, you've got the basic thing here, but you may have them have a question or two that you want them to pursue. Then also, if you're looking through it there, you'll notice that on this CD, there is a page that gives extra, that provides some extra information on Spanish Lookout in Belize. Any of you been there? It's kind of an interesting place. I was there a couple years ago. My daughter-in-law's from Belize. The CD is actually in color, but I printed this out in black and white because probably a lot of schools will use it in black and white because of the cost of color. But it is available in color. All these pictures are in color. The maps, like the next one, would be in color. Or the trivia page on animals in Belize. These things are on a CD for teachers that want to have a little time to do something in class. And there's an index in the back here of what you can, so you don't need to go paging through the CD. It has an index of all the projects that are available. There's practically a project for each lesson, and you can just pick what you want. Also on the CD, there are cultural recipes from Latin America. There's 12 of them on there from different areas in Latin America. So you young men, you can cook your students a meal from Latin America. And things like that definitely enhance their understanding of the culture in a region. And it is something that, once again, we are trying to provide for busy teachers a way to go beyond the textbook without pulling your hair out to do it. However, as I said, you can do this on your own, but it looks overwhelming, doesn't it? In our setting, it looks very overwhelming. And you got textbooks that don't have this teacher's guide. I would encourage you not to be overwhelmed and not do any of it. Say, I'm going to do it once every 2 weeks. Or page through your book and say, here's a section I'd like to do this on. Pick things that you can within your time range, your schedule. And still do some of this because it really enhances a student's understanding of history or geography. Or science. I mean, I'm working with history and geography here, but science is the same way. All right, anything from, I've been rambling around up here. I feel slightly disorganized today, but in high school, I don't give the worksheet at all. If you want them to be serious about their note-taking, it seems that it's unnecessary for them to do the worksheet if you give notes. So I think I would just skip the worksheet for that day, and then they would have their notes.
Mm-hmm. So you put the outline on the board and that's what you copy down then. Mm-hmm. Is that just straight right at the beginning of class?
No, as I talk.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. I just put it up there as I talk. That also keeps them from jotting it all down and not paying any attention. I'll just write it up as I talk. Mm-hmm. I've thought about that and I've tried it a little bit. It feels backwards not to have them read it first, but like I said, I have experimented. I can't say that I've really found any thing that says this is the way to go with it. Have any of you others thought of that approach where you lecture and then have them read?
I think, I'm not a highly curious teacher, I think that if you give them the big picture of what's going to happen, mm-hmm. the broad strokes, it's about all you can cover in class, and as they read, they can fill in the details, they have a category which is mm-hmm. stacked.
They have hooks to hang things on.
Yeah.
So you would say that there's possibly a pre-reading, but it would be more general, and then a later you would get to the detail. That might be a compromise.
Mm-hmm. One thing I found that if you have your students interested, though, they'll read ahead a little bit of the assignment. And so I have most of the subject for having them read after. I have the,
after the lecture.
After the mm-hmm. class, but I do have some students who I can tell during class that they have already read this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's no question that if they're interested in the material that they will read it with more interest. In fact, in our reading program we're developing as a Sunrise 2, we're putting little things in the teacher's guide to ask the student or kind of build an interest in the story before they ever get to it. Because they say that that enhances their comprehension because they're reading with more interest in the story. And some children, it doesn't really matter, but others, it can be the difference between them comprehending hardly anything out of the story. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you all. Like I said, I felt a little bumbly today for some reason, but hopefully, that was what it was. I'll blame it on this thing.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.